it's Tuned to Yesterday, delivering shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Welcome. Coming up in this hour, sitcoms. Later on, the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show from 1949. Right now, it's Our Miss Brooks, an undated broadcast called No Smoking. Most likely from the early to mid-1950s, the CBS broadcast stars Eve Arden, Richard Crenna, and Gail Gordon.
In those backward areas of the world where voodoo is practiced, natives often put a curse on the object of their dislike by sticking knives into a wax effigy of that person. However, our Miss Brooks, who teaches English at Madison High, scoffs at such ancient superstition.
Of course I do. Knives and wax figures are ridiculous. I can get just as good results by sticking ordinary pins into a cushion with Mr. Conklin's name on it. However, the hex I put on him last week didn't even slow down his latest anti-smoking crusade. As in all his crusades, the school became a scene of tumult and shouting. In contrast, my home life was peaceful and serene. That is, until last Thursday morning at breakfast. It seems Mrs. Davis had been studying salesmanship, and she decided to practice while I was sipping my orange juice.
Well, if it isn't Connie Brooks. Hi, old kid, old sock, old pal. Imagine running into you here, kid. Oh, pardon me. Did I slap your back too hard?
No, I always like to spray my eggs with orange juice. But what on earth...
Good old Connie. You're a sight for sore eyes. Yes, sirree. It's certainly great to see you after all this time.
You just woke me up 15 minutes ago.
You never looked better in your life, Connie. No, sir, never better. How's the wife and children?
Well, the wife's fine, but both the children are salesmen. Now, what are you trying to prove, Mrs. Davis?
That I can do what the company booklet suggests. Put the prospective customer in the proper mood.
I see. And what's the next step?
I haven't read that far yet. But I decided I wanted to do something with my spare time, as well as to make some extra money. So I'm selling a wonderful little item. The women should really go for it.
They should?
Yes, it's both attractive and useful. Just perfect for the average housewife who wants to keep her home neat and tidy.
What is it?
A fire extinguisher.
Yes, indeed. There's nothing like a fire to clutter up your house.
I'm not fooling, Connie. They're extremely handy and compact. I've already sold one to Mrs. Fisher next door and one to Mrs. Johnson down the block. They were able to put them to use immediately.
You mean they've each had a fire since then?
Oh, no, dear. Mrs. Fisher is using hers as a paperweight. And Mrs. Johnson is using hers as a flower pot. I thought perhaps I could sell you a fire extinguisher, too, Connie.
No, thanks, Mrs. Davis. I have all the table lamps I need. Where did you get the idea to sell fire extinguishers in the first place?
From you, Connie, about a week ago, remember? You told me the school sprinkler system went on the fritz, and Mr. Conklin had invoked his no-smoking edict to prevent possible fires. That set me to thinking about preventing home fires.
Oh, I see. Well, Mr. Conklin is still on his no-smoking crusade.
Has it been effective?
It's had the same effect as his other crusades. Teachers who never thought of smoking before are taking it up. There's always been a ban against student smoking, of course, but under Mr. Conklin's latest ruling, if a student's caught, he's expelled. As for teachers, if they're caught twice, they're dismissed.
My, that does seem severe. Still, it must be an ordeal for Osgood to follow his own edict. I know how he loves his cigars.
Well, he hasn't weakened yet that I know of, but since he's refrained from smoking, he's been an absolute bear. Growls at everybody. Oh, that must be Walter Denton. Come on in, Walter. The door's open.
I'd better go out and get him something to eat. What should I bring him back from the kitchen, dear?
You know Walter. Just bring back the kitchen.
Something
else. Good morning, Miss Brooks.
Why, Mr. Boynton.
I guess you're surprised to see me.
Well, yes, I was expecting Walter Denton.
I know, and that's why I came by for you, Miss Brooks. Walter won't be here this morning. He's in serious trouble.
What's the matter?
Well, Mr. Conklin presumably caught him smoking behind the school yesterday afternoon.
He did?
Yes, and you know the punishment for an offense like that. Mr. Conklin grilled him for hours.
He must be pretty well done by now. What actually happened, Mr. Boynton?
Walter has been expelled from Madison.
What?
And for something he didn't really do.
But you said he was caught smoking.
Well, I found out later he was merely covering up for Bull Jones, our star fullback.
Bull Jones? Well, why was he smoking?
He says Mr. Conklin makes him nervous. Anyway, when Walter saw Mr. Conklin coming, he grabbed the cigarette away from Bull and pushed him into the doorway. He knew our team would be ruined if Bull was caught and expelled, and it was the first time Bull ever did it.
But if you know this, Mr. Boynton, why didn't you tell Mr. Conklin?
Well, Walter swore me to secrecy, Miss Brooks. Well, I thought if you knew about it, though, you might intercede in Walter's behalf. That might get some real results.
That's true. It'd probably get us both expelled. You know how Mr. Conklin feels about me, Mr. Boynton.
Oh, you have had your differences, all right. If only Mr. Conklin wasn't so self-righteous. He feels that if he can give up smoking, everybody should.
I know. He even said in assembly that he'd never ask anyone to do anything he didn't do himself. Say, wait a minute.
What?
Suppose Mr. Conklin were caught puffing away on a big fat cigar after that little statement of his. He'd be a lot more lenient then, wouldn't he?
Maybe so, but how is anyone going to accomplish that little trick?
Well, leave that to me, Mr. Boynton. Do you have the paycheck you received yesterday?
Yes, right here in my pocket.
Good. Well, that one, combined with mine, should be just enough to buy a couple of good cigars for my little experiment.
But, Daddy, you simply can't expel a student if you catch him smoking only once.
Just watch me. I'm going to make an example of your Walter Dent and Harriet. An example that will stand as a warning for both students and teachers alike in the future.
But, Daddy...
Smoking endangers both life and property. It's unhealthy, uncouth, and delicious. Obnoxious.
But, Daddy, you yourself smoked right up until last week. And you're the principal of Madison High School.
See what I mean? As you know, I always try to be fair, Harriet.
But, Daddy, in cleaning out your desk drawer yesterday, I found 3 packs of cigarettes.
Everything you found in my desk drawer, I confiscated from the cloakrooms of our female teachers, Harriet.
I also found 4 cigars.
Some of those women have the most peculiar taste. Anyway, I'll throw out all that hideous stuff the first chance I get.
Oh, I already threw it away yesterday afternoon.
You what? Where did you throw it? Never mind. What's done is done. Now run along, child.
But, Daddy, won't you please reconsider about Walter?
Harriet, you know me better than that. When I make up my mind, wild horses can't drag me from my decision. This is probably one of the wildest to try. Who is it, and state your business?
Miss Brooks, sir, English teacher.
Come in, Miss Brooks. Goodbye, Harriet.
But, Daddy...
Goodbye, Harriet.
Oh, goodbye, Daddy. Goodbye, Miss Brooks.
Goodbye, Harriet. Goodbye, Mr. Conklin.
Goodbye, Miss Brooks.
Oh, how do you like that? One too many of us left the room.
That is strictly a matter of opinion, Miss Brooks. But come in. In order to avoid any lengthy discussion, I know you're here to plead for Walter Denton's scholastic life. No doubt you feel the punishment doesn't fit the crime.
On the contrary, sir, I agree with your actions wholeheartedly.
You agree with me?
Indubitably. There's no doubt in your mind, is there?
There wasn't any until you agreed with me. Somehow, I always get an uncomfortable feeling when we're on the same side.
Oh, it was the only course you could take, sir. Particularly after that speech of yours in assembly, where you said you'd never ask students or faculty to refrain from doing something you do yourself. And I know how hard it was for you to give up smoking.
Oh, do you really, Miss Brooks? Well, I had to do it. Since our sprinkler system went out of whack, Mr. Stone has been ruthless in his condemnation of smoking at Madison. He insisted that everyone caught smoking on school premises be reported to him.
I understand, sir. Well, you're better off to be rid of the horrible habit.
Oh, far better off. Far, far better. Notice how steadily I can hold this piece of paper in my hand since I've given it up.
Yes, indeed, sir. The breeze from it is nice and refreshing.
Yeah, my hand is shaking just a little, isn't it? But I'll be over that in a day or two.
Of course you will. And by then you'll have forgotten all about those big brown cigars with their ghastly taste of Havana tobacco.
Yes, you're right. I'll forget all about the ghastly taste of Havana tobacco.
And of sniffing the most disgusting aroma in the world.
Oh, yes, yes. The most disgusting aroma in the world.
Mr. Conklin, better take your nose out of that ashtray. It's empty.
Yes, of course. Now, if you didn't come in here to plead for Denton, just what do you want, Miss Brooks?
Well, sir, I found these cigars outside the men's cloakroom, and I thought I'd better check with you before I threw them in the incinerator.
Oh, well, I wouldn't dream of having you walk all that distance. Just to put them on my desk, Miss Brooks. I'll see that they're burned.
Very well, sir. Then I'll be off to class. Ta-ta, Mr. Conklin.
Ta-ta, Miss Brooks. Come here, you brown oblong beauties, you. No, Osgood, put them down. There's no smoking allowed in this school. Oh, one or two puffs can't do any harm. After all, I wouldn't want to lie to Miss Brooks. I told her they'd be burned. What a delightful taste. Now, where are those matches? Ah, here we are. Yep. Miss Brooks, what do you want?
Oh, nothing, sir. I'll come back when it's lit. I mean, in a bit. I misplaced my hat, and I was wondering where I left it.
Your hat is on your head, Miss Brooks.
Oh, that's where I left it.
I think I'm beginning to see through your little game, Miss Brooks.
My little game, sir?
You wanted to tempt me into smoking, didn't you?
Please, sir, you shouldn't make such accurate, wild guesses like that.
You thought that if you caught me smoking after my speech of the other day, I might be more lenient with your precious Walter Denton, didn't you? Have I hit it on the nose, Miss Brooks?
I can feel the cartilage cracking now. Mr. Conklin, it's true. I do want you to reconsider Walter's expulsion. It simply isn't fair. He wasn't smoking when you caught him yesterday. He was covering up for Bull Jones so that our football team wouldn't be ruined. And it was the first and last time Bull ever tried it, and
oh,
I don't know.
Oh, so that's it. Well, that does put a different light on things, doesn't it?
You mean you'll reconsider your decision, Mr. Conklin?
I most certainly will.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Not at all, Miss Brooks. Now not only Walter Denton is expelled, but Bull Jones as well.
What? Excuse me, sir.
Where are you going, Miss Brooks?
Just out to the incinerator.
But you left the cigars on my desk.
Who's thinking about the cigars? I'm going to jump into it myself. Walter Denton and Bull Jones are being expelled from school on a smoking charge, and he has to notify their parents.
Walter Denton expelled? Our Walter... Why, that's terrible. Connie, isn't there something you can do to help him?
Yes, I could keep my mouth shut. Oh, Walter just came into the cafeteria, Mrs. Davis. If he comes over here, we've got to do our best to console him. He must be terribly upset about what happened.
He's coming over now, Connie.
Greetings, fair ladies, on this sorrowful day.
Hello, Walter. Please join us. I'm just starting to eat lunch.
Oh, no, thanks, Miss Brooks. I just stopped by to bid a fond farewell to my late teacher.
I'm only starting to eat lunch. I'm not dead yet.
Are you very upset about what's happened, Walter, dear?
Oh, of course he's upset, Mrs. Davis. How could he help but be?
Oh, no. No, really, Miss Brooks, I don't feel so bad.
This is no time for bravery, dear. We're your friends, and what are friends for but to sympathize and console?
Well, the way I figure, it's all for the best. And anyway... This isn't the only school in the world.
Just think to yourself, perhaps it's all for the best. And anyway, this isn't the only school in the world. Is there an echo in here?
We're going to miss you, Walter.
Yes, Walter, we certainly are.
The Mornings aren't going to see the same without you, dear. Less liveliness, less gaiety, less laughter.
More food. No, Mrs. Davis is right, Walter. It won't be the same. Something will be gone from our lives.
Yes. Something very important will be gone. Something very important.
and very dear. Oh, look, Mrs. Davis, there's no use crying. Walter knows how we feel about him, and that we're going to miss him.
Oh, gee, I don't want you to cry about it. Gosh, it isn't as if I was going away forever.
No, that's true.
He isn't going away forever.
Get some other kid to drive you to school, Miss Brooks?
I know, but it won't be the same risking my life with a stranger.
Look, wherever I go to school, I'll still come over to visit you.
Yes, please do, Walter.
Come often, Walter. The refrigerator door will always be open.
Okay, now, dry your eyes. I still have to get a few things in my locker, but I'll see you both before I go.
All right, dear. You know, Mrs. Davis, he isn't taking it half as badly as he should, considering the way we consoled him.
Miss Brooks, something awful is happening.
Oh, we know all about Walter, Harriet, and there's nothing more I can do for him.
It isn't Walter, Miss Brooks, it's Mr. Boynton.
There's nothing more I can do for him, either.
Acting absolutely crazy. He's in the little room right next to Daddy's office this minute, puffing away on a cigar.
But he's never smoked before in his life.
Well, if Daddy catches him in his present mood, Mr. Boynton will be fired. Miss Brooks, you've got to do something right away.
Come on, Mrs. Davis. At least we'll have a chance to see if that fire extinguisher of yours really works.
Good grief, Harriet was right.
Mr. Boynton, what on earth are you doing? Have you gone crazy? You know Mr. Conklin's rules against smoking.
Indeed I do, Miss Brooks. Say, the cigars aren't bad. Not bad at all. Of course, I never smoked one of them before.
I would never have guessed. You'd better put that thing out. Mr. Conklin might be back from lunch any minute now.
That's what I'm hoping for, Miss Brooks.
What? You've been talking to your frogs too long. If Mr. Conklin catches you smoking, you'll be fired.
I'm fully aware of that possibility, Miss Brooks. I shall always stand by the board's ruling on smoking in public schools, but I simply cannot condone Mr. Conklin's high-handed treatment of Walter Denton. He doesn't deserve to be expelled. So I know not what course others may take, but if Walter goes, I go.
Thank you, Patrick Henry. But I agree with your stand, Mr. Boynton. If Walter Denton goes, we both go.
You mean it, Miss Brooks?
Just hand me a cigar and stand back.
Miss Brooks, you're not serious.
Well, frankly, I'd prefer a pipe. But cigars seem to be the only thing you've got, so hand one over. How about you, Mrs. Davis?
No, thanks. I swore off years ago. But on second thought, if you two can do it, I suppose I can, too.
Good. Got a match, Mr. Boynton?
Here you are, Miss Brooks.
Oh, say, this isn't bad at all. Is it, Mrs. Davis? How about you, Mr. Boynton? I see we're all accounted for. No, sir, it's not bad at all. How do I look smoking a cigar, Mrs. Davis?
Lovely, Connie. The brown of the cigar goes very well with the green of your face. Are you feeling all right, dear?
Well, up to now, I feel fine.
This little room is certainly filling up with smoke quickly.
Yes, it is. Isn't there someone we can nominate for something? Mr. Boynton, please stand still.
Well, I am standing still, Miss Brooks.
No, you're not. You're gliding around. And Mrs. Davis, I don't see any reason for you to bob around like that.
Bob?
Yes?
Your name is Philip. And please ask the three ladies with you to stop swimming.
You really must be feeling the effects of that cigar.
Oh, now the whole room is going around and...
Here, Connie, lean on me. Maybe better.
What's going on in here?
Oh, hello, Mr. Conklin.
Miss Brooks. Poison. Mrs. Davis. What is the meaning of this outrage? This room is filled with cigar smoke. Miss Brooks, I'm talking to you. Well, say something.
Happy New Year.
Boynton, if you value your job, I insist on an immediate explanation for this disgraceful display.
Certainly, sir. This... this is merely my way of protesting Walter Denton's unjustified expulsion. I knew I'd be fired if I were caught smoking like this. Well, if Walter goes, I go.
And I go.
And I go.
You keep out of this, Margaret. What can I fire you from? This is mutiny, that's what it is. Mutiny. Now, I insist you go back to your battle station. A classroom!
No, nothing doing, Captain Bly. Mr. Conklin. You caught us smoking, and we insist on the same punishment meted out to Walter Denton and Bull Jones. We've got our rights, you know.
Connie, you don't have to wave your cigar in Osgood's face to make a point, do you?
Oh, let her wave it. Let her wave it. Nice. Miss Brooks. Now that I know what's behind your harebrained scheme, I refuse to be a party to it. You and Boynton are staying.
And Walter and Bull?
They're going.
Who's that? Is anybody in there? Holy cow, it's Mr. Stone. Quiet, everyone. Quiet. I'm going to lock the door. Now, no one say a word. If he finds us in here with all this smoke, he'll string us up by our T-zones.
Mr. Conklin, will you reconsider your decision about Walter and Bull?
Miss Brooks, you know I never alter any decision I make. Once I've made up my mind that they go, they go.
Then I'll scream.
Then they stay.
Quiet, quiet. Maybe he'll leave.
Seems he already has, sir. There's not a sound out there.
My, that was a narrow escape. He's probably out on the campus by now.
I'll get at the reason for that smoke. Hand me that axe, Denton, and we'll break down the door.
Yes, yes, he's probably out on the campus by now. Well, certainly was a close squeak. But luckily, he didn't wait around.
Hand me that axe and we'll break down the door!
quick, open the window. Maybe we can wave out the smoke.
There are no windows in here, sir. There's absolutely no place for the smoke to get out.
Stick around and there will be.
Smoke was coming from in here, Denton. So thick I can hardly see. Why, there are people in here.
Yes, sir. Live ones.
Not for long.
Well, this is quite a little group. Yes, sir, quite a little group. The principal of a high school and two members of his faculty all caught red-handed. Has any of you anything to say? Well, don't just stand there. One of you say something.
Have a cigar, Mr. Stone?
Mr. Stone, believe me, sir, this isn't the way it appears to be. We weren't really smoking.
Well, what were you doing with those lighted cigars? Playing golf?
We were about to try an experiment, Mr. Stone.
An experiment?
Yes, sir. These doubting Thomases wouldn't believe my portable fire extinguisher would work.
Your portable fire extinguisher.
Meet the best little lady portable fire extinguisher salesman in our town.
I brought two over in my knitting bag. Here, they're right here, see? When I heard the sprinkler system was broken, I contacted Mr. Conklin, and he said he'd buy a half dozen if they work.
If this works, he'll buy two dozen.
Seems incredible, but these are fire extinguishers. Is it possible? I owe you an apology, Osgood.
He'll call it even if you'll just believe him.
That's why I came over to see you, Osgood, about that sprinkler system. You'll have a new one in about a week. In the meantime, I think it's sensible to buy some of these extinguishers.
Oh, I agree, sir. I agree. Even with the sprinkler system, we'll probably have some use for them later on.
And I know just where, Mr. Conklin.
Where?
As ashtrays in the new fireproof faculty room you're going to build.
Our Miss Brooks on Tuned to Yesterday, an undated CBS radio broadcast, though likely from the early to mid-1950s. It's an hour of sitcoms on Tune to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levionier. Coming up next, a new car in the Harris household on the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show. In a way, a spinoff from the character Phil created on the Jack Benny program, where he served as bandleader for many years. This March 19th, 1950 broadcast, first heard on NBC, and features co-stars Elliot Lewis, Robert North, and Walter Tetley.
Good health to all from Rexall. And now your Rexall family druggist brings you the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, written by Ray Singer and Dick Chevrolet, with Elliot Lewis, Walter Tetley, Robert North, Janine Roos, and Whitfield, Walter Sharp and his music, yours truly, Bill Foreman, and starring Alice Faye and Phil Harris. This morning, there seems to be a little excitement in the Harris household. Phil has gone out to the garage to get his car when suddenly he comes bursting back into the house.
Alice, something terrible has happened. Out of my way. Let me hit that phone.
Oh, take it easy, Phil. Calm down. What's wrong?
My car's been stolen. Call the police. Call the FBI. Get Sam Spade.
Phil, your car hasn't been stolen. Frankie borrowed it this morning.
Borrowed my new chartreuse Cadillac? I've only had it 2 weeks, and he's borrowed it 8 times already. How can that guy be so inconsiderate? How am I supposed to get downtown?
Oh, Frankie arranged for your transportation.
How?
He left you a transfer for the Hollywood bus.
Oh, gee whiz. Suppose he wrecks my car.
If you ask me, it'll look better in that condition. Why on earth did you buy a car with such an awful color scheme?
Get who's knocking chartreuse. To hear you talk, you'd think you never saw a chartreuse convertible with pale fudge fenders.
Philip, what made you get a chartreuse car?
He wanted something to match his shoes.
He has shoes that color?
Why, to hear you talk, you'd think you never saw chartreuse shoes with pale fudge tongues.
Philip, I don't know why you put up with Francis. He does the most awful things. Why, that man doesn't have one redeeming quality.
That ain't so. Remley's all right. Everybody has bad points. He just happens to have a higher score than anybody
He's always borrowing your car. He wrecked 2 of them last year, and, well, it makes me mad.
Well, if I don't mind too much, why should it make you mad?
Because I can't afford to keep buying you new ones. Maybe it'd be cheaper if I bought Frankie a car.
Hold it, Luella. I ain't gonna have my wife buying some other guy a car. I'll buy him one.
With what?
I'll pay for it out of my mad money. I'll let him go down and pick out a cheap used car for himself.
Oh, Phil, you know Frankie won't pick out a cheap used car for himself. He'll pick out the best new one on the market.
No, he won't. Not the way I'm going to handle it. With my plan, I'll guarantee he'll be the one to suggest a used car. I'll tell him it's for you and that I'm... Wait a minute, I'll get it.
Hi, Curly.
Well, good morning, Mr. Remley. Nice of you to return my car.
Who's returning it? I ran out of gas. I came back to get your credit card.
Remley, you ain't getting no credit card. And furthermore, I want you to stop driving my car, and that's final.
That's okay with me. I wouldn't drive it again anyway until you had it repainted. That awful chartreuse color is affecting my social life.
Frankie, it's a beautiful greenish yellow.
Yeah, that's the trouble. It looks like an unripe taxi.
Now, Now, look here, Remley.
Every time I stop to pick up a girl, she jumps in and yells, "Follow that cab!"
Now, listen, I'm not going to stand...
I don't mind that, but the ticking of the meter is making me nervous.
Well, I don't care if... What meter?
The one I had put in this morning, so it shouldn't be a total loss. Gee, Curly, I don't know...
Will you call a cab? I have to go downtown.
Excuse me, Curly, I got a customer. Get in, lady. Oh, it's Alice.
Oh, hello, Frank.
Oh, Alice.
Phil, did you tell him about buying the car?
What car?
No, honey, I haven't had a chance to tell him that. I have... No, he just came in.
What car?
Well, it's a car. You see, I'm going to buy a new car for someone very close to me.
Oh, gee, Curly, that's sweet of you. I don't know what to say, except let's get over to the Cadillac agency and pick one out for me.
Just a minute, Remley. This car don't happen to be for you. You see, I'm buying the car for Alice.
Alice? But I'm the one who needs it. Why does she... Oh, well, that's life. Money goes to money. Them who has, gets.
And Frankie,
You
know, you have such excellent taste. I'd appreciate it if you'll help Phil pick a car for me, will you?
Okay, but my heart won't be in it.
Oh, thanks, Frankie. Well, I have to run along now. See you later.
Fine thing. I need a car myself, and I gotta go help buy one for somebody else.
Oh, Frankie, don't feel that way about it. Look, I'll tell you what. If there's any money left after buying Alice's car, I'll give it to you, and you can buy one of your own.
If there's any money left over, I can have it?
Yeah. Now let's go down and pick out a nice new car for Alice.
New car? I got a better idea. Let's get her a used car.
Yeah. Maybe a good used car will be all right. But, where can I find a reliable used car dealer?
I know a guy.
I figured you would. Look, Remley, I got $300 to spend, and I don't want to be gypped. Now, is this guy you know, is he honest?
Please, Curly. I'll thank you not to cast any aspersions on Hot Heap Harrigan.
Hot Heap Harrigan. Is he the guy who used to be with Nothing Down Brown?
Gentlemen.
Well, in that case, okay, let's go see him. Come on.
I better go see Hot Heap alone, Curly.
Why?
Well, he doesn't like strangers. Being a typical used car salesman, he's shy and reticent. Besides, if I go alone, I can get a better price from him.
Okay. Now, here's the $300, but remember, Remley, pick out something nice for Alice. Something you yourself would like. Now, don't try to save anything.
Well, you know me better than that. I'll pick out the best used car they got for Alice. I'll see you soon.
Little does he realize that the automobile he is picking for Alice is in reality for himself.
Well, now that I've reset the plot, I think I'll sing.
I got my Sunday best on, going strutting with my Laura Bell Lee. She's waiting for me, and I'll be there, I declare, with an hour to spare. And when we're walking arm in arm down the boulevard, ooh, golly, I'm proud. Have a look at that crowd. Hey, Pop, call the cop for the traffic will stop, 'cause she's so, so, so adorable, my Laura Bell Lee.
His heart's desire,
my bundle of guys, yo, gee. So don't blame me for highfalutin'. It got my horn out, and I'm a tootin'. It bust each button when I'm out strutting with my Laura Belly.
That's why he is looking like a million. He's got that $1 million glow. He's stepping out.
I've got my Sunday best on, going strutting with my Laura Bell Lee. She's waiting for me, and I'll be there, I declare, with an hour to spare. We pass the corner where the boys always hang around. They give her the eye as we're going by. That's fine, that's the sign that they know that she's mine.
We all agree that she's adorable, your Laura Bell Lee.
Yes, take my word, I got the best of it. One good look will tell the rest of it.
I'll keep pitching, cause I'll be hitching to my Laura Belly.
Bill, suppose Frankie doesn't like the car when he finds out it's for him and not for me.
Honey, he's got to like it. He can't complain because he's picking it out himself. That's where my scheme is infallible. Infallible! Oh, Philip, watch that pretty mouth of yours. Them $9 words are pouring out promiscuously. Whoops, there I go again.
What kind of a car he picks. He has such awful taste.
Uh-oh, that must be him now. Hold it. Come in.
Well, I got you an automobile, and it's a beauty. Come on outside. I'll show it to you. Well, you see it, Alice. And I got a good deal on it, too.
Remley.
Hmm?
Did you spend the whole $300?
Well, not quite. I have a little change left over.
How much change?
$275.
You paid $25 for a car. What kind
Don't
of...
Don't knock it till you see it. Well, Alice, here's your car. Ain't she a knockout?
Frankie.
Notice how low-slung she is.
Frankie.
You'll be proud to drive a sleek, streamlined job like this.
Frankie. You...
What?
That's the pile of cans Phil put out this morning.
You sure? Could have sworn I parked it here. Oh, there it is, over there.
Where?
The big pile. The one leaning up against the garbage can. The one with the celery sticking up is the garbage can. The program was transcribed for earlier broadcast.
A wreck like that.
What's the matter? Don't you like it?
Well, I guess it's all right, but isn't it kind of tired looking? Why is it lying down?
It's relaxing. When you get as old as that car, you'll sneak a short nap every chance you get to.
It's not an old car. It may not be brand new, but it's built better than the cars of today. It's got fine material in it. Just look at the isinglass and that windshield. And it comes with a lot of extras. Goggles, duster, and a spare set of candles for the headlights.
Has it got a radio?
Radio. It's got something better than that. It has a console with a three-way combination. Crystal set, gramophone, and stereopticon slot. And these are...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me see them records.
Yeah, here you are.
Nice set of cylinders. Good tunes, too. Oh, Susanna, Camp Town Races. Here's a cutesy, honey, because I don't think this will make it.
Your feeble attempt at humor is quite pathetic. Alice, aren't you happy with this car?
Would you be happy with it?
I've dreamed of having a car like this all my life. Wouldst that I could afford it.
You couldst. Remley, I got news for you. This is your car. I bought it for you, not Alice.
For me? You mean this beautiful car I picked out for Alice is the junk heap you bought for me?
There she lays, Rob, and she's all yours.
I ought to punch you right in the nose.
Well, it's your own fault, Frankie. Bill gave you $300 to buy a car, but you had to chisel and buy one for $25. You made your bed, now you'll have to sleep in it.
I don't feel bad enough she's got to come up with a corny expression like that. I ain't going to keep this scrap pile.
Well, that's all you're going to get. Now, if you don't like it, sell it to somebody else at a profit and buy yourself a better one.
Who can I get to buy this heap?
I know a guy.
Now he's stealing my character. How low can a man get? Alice, I don't know how you live with this man. Are you in love with him?
Of course I am.
Ah, you're just saying that. Come, girl, you can confide in me. What do you really think of him?
Well, if you must know, I'll tell you.
I like the lead to my song much better, and I work alone. I don't know.
I'm as corny as Kansas in August. I'm as normal as blueberry pie. No more a smart little girl with no heart. I have found me a wonderful guy. I am in a conventional dither with a conventional star in my eye. And you will note there's a lump in my throat when I speak of that wonderful guy. I'm as trite and as gay as a daisy in May, a cliche coming true. I'm bromidic and bright as the moon. Happy night pouring light on the dew.
She's as corny as Kansas in August, high as a flag on the 4th of July.
If you'll excuse an expression I use, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love with a wonderful guy.
She's as bright and as gay as a daisy in May, a cliche coming true. She's romantic and bright as a moon, happy night pouring light on the dew.
I'm as corny as Kansas in August, high as a flag on the 4th of July. If you'll excuse an expression I use, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love with a wonderful guy.
All I did was ask her what she thought of. She could have said, I like him, but no, she had to make a production out of it, going to a 2-minute song.
Hey, look, Frankie, forget about that. Now, look, I've been thinking it over. Now, if you don't like the car, you don't have to keep it. Take it back to the guy you bought it from and get the money.
I can't do that. The guy's no longer alive.
What are you talking about? You just bought the car from him an hour ago.
I know. When I told him I'd take it, he dropped dead.
Oh, why did
Well, anyway, he collapsed. Fell down.
You know, Remley, come to think of it, now, just... quiet down a minute. This car doesn't look too bad.
Well, maybe it doesn't.
Well, if it has a good motor, you can have the body fixed up and it'll be okay.
Hi, fellas, I bring... Hey, what's that dead moose doing in the street?
Julius, this ain't no dead moose. It's my new automobile.
This is an automobile? Where did you get this monstrosity?
It's not a monstrosity. This automobile happens to be a family heirloom. My grandfather handed it down to my father.
Well, old Butterfingers must have dropped it.
Although it's an heirloom and very dear to me, I'm going to sell this automobile.
Are you kidding? Who'd buy this monstrosity?
Stop calling it a monstrosity.
I will if you stop calling it an automobile.
Look, kid, even though this heirloom's worth a lot of money, I'm forced to sell it at a sacrifice. And since You're the dearest friend I got. I want you to have it. It's worth $3,000, but if you make me a reasonable offer, it's yours.
You mean you're willing to sell me this valuable family heirloom? It's worth $3,000 and you're willing to let me have it at a sacrifice?
That's right. What's your top offer?
$1.35.
You're offering me $1.35 for this beautiful car?
I started too high, huh?
Look, kid, this is a good buy. It's got a wonderful engine.
Do tell. What does it run on, steam or batteries?
Now, don't be a wise guy. It's a modern engine. It's economical to run. It don't use much fuel.
How much mileage can I get?
Well, the last guy who had it got as much as 50 miles to one cord of wood.
It burns wood?
You can use charcoal if you want.
Just think, you'll be the only kid at school with a charcoal broiled Essex.
You don't have to have a barbecue Buick, do you?
Look, son, this is a great buy. Come on, we'll take you for a ride. Julius, you start the motor.
Okay, where's the crank?
You don't need a crank for this car.
Of course not. It's a cinch to start this motor. Do you see that slot, Julius, on the side of the hood?
Yeah, what about it?
Here's the key. Wind it up.
What are you trying to do, kill my sale? No, this car has a self-starter. I'll show you. Something seems to be wrong with the motor.
Choke it.
Sounds like it's being strangled now. I know where you got this. Jack Benny's Maxwell had puffs.
You keep quiet, kid. I'll try it again. Hey, she started. Why is the motor coughing?
Maybe it's got an allergy. Now put it in gear and let's get going.
Okay. Fighting me. Fighting me. It won't go. There. Hey, Curly, it's moving. What happened?
I must have kicked one of the galley slaves. Come on, Julius, quick, get in. Ain't you coming with us?
No, thanks. One of us has got to stay alive for the inquest.
Hey, Remley, we're picking up speed. Hey, it's all downhill. Hey, you better brake it a little. Watch where you're driving.
If you don't like the way I'm driving, you take the wheel.
Frankie, put that wheel back on the shaft.
Hang on.
Hey, we're heading for that store when to stop the car.
I'm trying to.
Look out. Duck, Remley, duck.
Say something. Curly, are you all right?
Oh, yeah. I always ride with my head between my knees like that. Remley, look at that mess you've made out of that store window. You've broken everything and... Uh-oh.
Hmm?
Here comes the owner.
Well, do you gentlemen wish to be waited on?
No, thank you. We're just browsing.
What's the idea of smashing in here like this? What happened?
Well, we were window shopping and we overdid it.
You'll pay for this. I'll sue you for every penny you've got. I'll take you
into court.
Now,
wait a minute, mister. I don't want any trouble. It's not our fault. I'll pay for any damage we've done. Now, how much do I owe you?
$1,500, and you're not leaving here till I get the money.
But I haven't got $1,500 on me. Where am I going to get it?
Don't worry, Curly. I'll get it. I feel partly responsible for this accident. I know a guy who'll let me have 1,500 bucks. Loan me your car so I can drive over and get
it. All right, here are the keys, but hurry, Remley, will you?
Hurry.
Hurry.
They're 1300, 1400, 1500. There you are, mister.
Okay. Now you can go, Harris.
Oh, Frankie, you're a lifesaver. I don't know what I would have done if you didn't get that 1500 bucks.
That's all right, Curly. You know me. I'll do anything for a pal.
What a day. What a day. Now, come on. Let's get in my car and go home. Where'd you park it?
What's on that lot on the corner of 5th and Main?
Well, let's go on over there and get... Hey, wait a minute. That's a used car lot.
Of course. Where do you think I got the 1500 bucks?
Oh.
Phil, you were lucky to get your car back from that used car lot.
I certainly wasn't. Remley, you ain't going to borrow it no more. You got your own car now. Anytime you want it, just go down to the grocery and take it out of the window.
I already got it out. I gave it to my aunt as a present.
Your aunt don't drive. What's she going to do with it?
She's having it wired. She's going to make a lamp out of it.
This program is produced and directed by Paul Phillips. Included in today's cast were Ruth Davis and Herb Biker. The part of Frankie Remley was played by Elliot Lewis, and Julius was played by Walter Tetley. Alice Faye appeared through the courtesy of 20th Century Fox.
Stay tuned for The Adventures of Sam Spade, which follows immediately on NBC.
The Phil Harris Alice Faye Show on Tune 2 Yesterday, an NBC episode heard on March 19, 1950. And that brings to an end this hour of sitcoms on Tune 2 Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVernier. It's been a pleasure.